even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to.
You know, the other thing we really value here is making mistakes. Because it shows you're engaged. You just dive in. Some of you may know that today there's a women's march going on. I did. Thank you, Ron. There's a women's march going on. And so I thought I would take this opportunity to talk about a bit about a woman who just recently died, and also about how we express the wisdom that comes from living deeply. But first I'd like to say a little bit about identity and uniqueness. Dogen's teaching is that we are both completely an expression of everything that is in each moment. That is, we are, as we say, empty of inherent existence, not empty of reality, please remember, but empty of fixedness. Empty of separateness. And at the very same time, we are completely unique, real, and particular. Sometimes there's some confusion about this. Somebody says, oh, things are empty. It means like an empty cup. Or bleakness, or nothing matters, but the teachings are just the opposite. That it is this, the entire universe comes together endlessly and in endlessly unique ways. So what this means is that we are, in our particularity, are completely free to realize the interwoven dynamic reality that is us. And we don't have to be something else. This uniqueness frees us to understand that we share the same fundamental nature. And that we can appreciate uniqueness, revel in it, respect it. We don't have to rank different realities. So this teaching is the basis of our engagement in the world. It's a fundamental orientation that allows us to work together with others, to be curious, receptive, empathic, and effective. It's, we return to this again and again and again. And maybe essential part of our practice is to see the way our deluded thinking prevents us from seeing clearly, right? It's like if you see a mirage and you know it's a mirage, it doesn't function as a mirage anymore, right? You don't go chasing after that puddle. So we return again and again to awareness of the delusion that keeps us from this full-hearted relationship with reality as it is. We look, in other words, for ways to support our wisdom eye. One way to do this is by listening to the wisdom expressed by others. Others who have stopped and looked and listened and have a particular gift perhaps for expressing what they see what they experience in a way that gets through to us, that touches us, that transforms us. One way that we can listen to the wisdom of others is to listen to poetry. The shape of poetry frees language. It frees language to carry a message that gets through in ways that didactic things don't. It's a form of expression that can change us. And, there are many kinds of poetry, many dynamic, wonderful poems. You know, one of the blessings of contemporary music is there's poetry everywhere in it, isn't there? Poetry that expresses the gritty reality of racism, the best of it. Some of it's totally khaki. But some of it is dynamic and refreshing. And there are poets that have been alive to witness the brutality of war and the beauty of childbirth and, all different dimensions of our lives. But the poet I want to talk about today is one who has brought light and healing to many. And her name was Mary Oliver, and she died just a few days ago. So her particular voice has a simplicity about it, in a way. But it's clear and sustaining. She was born in 1935 in Maple Heights, Ohio, into a family that, by all accounts, was kind of a mess. She said she had very difficult, very, very difficult childhood, and her home was far from safe and nurturing. So as a child, she went into the natural world. She was lucky enough to be in an environment in which she could walk out her door and be in, as we call, in nature. Isn't that an odd phrase, in nature, as if there's someplace else? And it's there that she found home. And she developed a very clear eye. And she was taught by life in that circumstance. She said about her life outdoors, that it was an extended family. She said, "I don't know why I felt such an affinity for the natural world, except that it was available to me. It was right there. And for whatever reason, I felt those important connections, those first experiences being made with the natural world rather than the social world." Have you ever experienced that? You know, somehow we feel connected in a certain way. We experience reality in a certain way when we're out from under neon lights, or alone, or with others. But there's something about the natural world that can heal us. At least it did for her. You know, there is an inherent wisdom in our being, like a tree knowing how to grow into a tree. A tree does not grow into a cactus? A dog? A tree grows into a tree. And that's the wisdom of life in us. You know, there's a naturalness to it. But we need to reach for that. This wisdom allows us to see, to be curious. Mary Oliver asked, "What does it mean that the earth is so beautiful, and what shall I do about it?" Dogen teaches us that we are made for this world. We see the beauty because we are inextricably bound with it, shaped by it, a part of it. The earth is beautiful to us because we are of the earth. The key to understanding this is not figuring it out. right? We love to figure things out, don't we? We like knowledge. We like to grasp things. We like to say, I understand now. We love to ask why, don't we? But why is not the way here. The key to understanding or realizing is living it out. We know this. This is our practice. We don't understand Zazen by reading about it. Reading about it is good. No problem. Hey, I'm a professor. I love reading about things. It's living it, it's doing it that actually teaches us, though. So, Mary Oliver began to write poetry at 14. Did you write poetry when you were 14? Have you ever gone back and looked at it? But as we say, you have to start somewhere. But at 17, she visited the home of the poet Edna St. Vincent Millay and formed a friendship with the poet's sister. And she spent 7 years, beginning at 17, she spent 7 years going through Edna St. Vincent Millay's papers. So I think this is another part of our practice. We spend time with writings. We spend time immersing ourselves in the voices of people that have gone before. We understand that we have something to learn, that we have something to be with. We bathe ourselves in a sense. And I know I've said this ad nauseum, but St. Benedict says we should eat the teachings to the extent that we burp the teachings. So it's like that. We immerse ourselves in this world. We listen and we are touched by it. And she began publishing poems in her late 20s and taught college and published many books of poetry. She received the National Book Award, the Pulitzer Prize, many other prizes. But I don't think that's what motivated her. She returned to her love of nature over and over. And in the 60s, she moved to Provincetown. And she said of it, I go off to my woods, my pond, my sun-filled harbor, no more than a mere comma on the map of the world, but to me the emblem of everything. I go off to my woods, my pond, my sun-filled harbor, no more than a blue comma in the on the map of the world, but to me the emblem of everything. When I read that, I thought, you know, this, we in a sense are a comma, we're a dot in the world. Our world, this world that we live in, this neighborhood, this community, it's like it's just a part of this vastness, and we can think, oh, it's just this little place. But it is the world. It's our world, and it is the full world. To be in a specific place in a particular way, to sit Zazen on that cushion at that moment, to be here, this is what Dogen says our way is. He says to do one practice is to practice completely. And that one practice is different in each moment. Right? We sit Zazen, we offer incense, we bow, we go to work, we the other day, after the big storm, looked outside our window and saw that our neighbors, the door that covered our neighbor's hot water heater had blown open, and everything was. So what do you do? The practice is you go knock knock knock. Yes, I've got six other things to do, but knock knock knock. Did you know that the water heater was exposed? That's doing one practice of practicing completely. At work, at your home, whatever. So to be of the world is to be in this world in a very specific way. And that's what allows us to realize who we are in the deepest, most universal sense. So we are one speck, one very, very, very small part of the world. But knowing that doesn't diminish us. It actually expands us. Right? Mary Oliver says in Wild Geese, "Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things." So I'm going to read that again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, in other words, how constricted, whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination. It calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. No matter how lonely, no matter how deluded, no matter how caught we are, each moment, the world, we are the world offering itself to ourselves and to all beings. And our imagination is not a flight of fantasy. This is our deepest intuition, this imagination. We could say Buddha nature, but we tend to get goofy ideas of what we think Buddha nature is. Calls to us, harsh and exciting, over and over again, constantly, each moment, never without that voice calling to us, announcing our place in the family of things, announcing that we are inextricably this world as it is. So I think, in particular, Mary Oliver's poems remind us and inspire us to return. So I thought I'd read a few to you. Okay? So, again, invoking Saint Benedict, please listen with the ears of your heart. This one is called The Journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Sit down, right? Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble, and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its still fingers at the very foundation. Though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late. Enough. And a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could, determined to save the only life you could save. This is Zazen, right? Does not mean that you don't care about other beings. So I'll read it again, okay? You want to hear it again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble, and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough. And a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. We could say a lot about this poem. A lot. But I'll just say a few things. When we hear the voice, that calls us to remember our own life while remembering the voice of all life. We're not ignoring others. We're returning to that place where vital compassion and fierceness can take us into the world. We can be distracted. We can place others before ourselves in a way that does not work. Perhaps this speaks more to some of us than others. We each have our own way we need to examine ourselves and see what distracts us, what deludes us, what keeps us from expressing our true nature each moment. And when we face this, we face the trembling of the house, the trembling of what's familiar, the self. But we don't stop. We feel the stiff fingers at the very foundations of who we think we are. But we remember it's late. We were born to die. And the road is filled with branches and stones. Obstacles can be everywhere. But when we return again and again and again, we recognize something true about ourselves and others that's been there all along. And we remember to save the only life we have to save, which is our own, which is also all beings. Let me read you a second one. What I have learned so far. Meditation is old and honorable, so why should I not sit every morning of my life on the hillside looking into the shining world? This is Zazen again, right? Because properly attended to, delight as well as havoc is suggestion. Can one be passionate about the just, the ideal, the sublime, and the holy, and yet commit no labor in its cause? I don't think so. All summations have a beginning. All effect has a story. All kindness begins with the sown seed. Thought buds towards radiance. The gospel of light is the crossroads of indolence or action. Be ignited or be gone. Meditation. What I have learned so far, she says. Meditation is old and honorable, so why should I not sit every morning of my life on the hillside looking into the shining world? Because properly attended to, delight as well as havoc is suggestion. One can be passionate about the just, the ideal, the sublime, and the holy. Can one be passionate about the just, the ideal, the sublime, and the holy, and yet commit no labor in its cause? I don't think so. All summations have a beginning. All effect has a story. All kindness begins with the sown seed. Thought buds through radiance. The gospel of light is the crossroads of indolence or action. Be ignited or be gone. So when we sit on our zafus, it's like sitting on a hillside looking into the shining world. Yeah. And delight, havoc, you know, you sit long enough, you see everything. And when we discover, when we have this passionate dedication. How can we not commit labor for this cause? Be ignited or be gone. Here's one more. This is just a fragment from a larger poem called Bone. Beside me, the gray sea was opening and shutting its wave doors, unfolding over and over its time, ridiculing roar. I looked, but I couldn't see anything through its dark-knit glare. Yet don't we all know? The golden sand is there at the bottom. Though our eyes have never seen it, nor can our hands ever catch it. This reminds us that the golden sea is at the bottom, whether we can see it or not. Beside me, the gray sea was opening and shutting its wave doors, unfolding over and over its time, ridiculing roar. I looked, but I couldn't see anything through its dark-knit glare. Yet don't we all know the golden sand is there at the bottom? Though our eyes have never seen it, nor can our hands ever reach it. So, these are some of her many, many poems. And I'd like to close with one more. It's called When Death Comes. When death comes, like the hungry bear in autumn, when death comes and takes all the bright coins from his purse to buy me and snaps the purse shut, when death comes, like the measles pox, when death comes, like an iceberg between the shoulder blades, I want to step through the door full of curiosity, wondering, what is it going to be like, the cottage of darkness? And therefore, I look upon everything as a brotherhood and a sisterhood, and I look upon time as no more than an idea, and I consider eternity as another possibility. And I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy, and as singular. And each name as a comfortable music in the mouth, tending, as all music does, towards silence. And each body a lion of courage and something precious to the earth. When it's over, I want to say, all my life, I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into its arms, into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened and full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. Shall I read that again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When death comes like the hungry bear in autumn, when death comes and takes all the bright coins from his purse to buy me and snaps the purse shut, when death comes like the measles pox, when death comes like an iceberg between the shoulder blades, I want to step through the door full of curiosity, wondering, what is it going to be like, that cottage of darkness? And therefore, I look upon everything as a brotherhood and a sisterhood. And I look upon time as no more than an idea. And I consider eternity as another possibility. And I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy and as singular. And each name is comfortable music in the mouth, tending as all music does towards silence. and each body a lion of courage and something precious to the earth. When it's over, I want to say, all my life, I was a bride married to amazement. I was a bridegroom taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. So these are some words from a woman who spent her life trying to craft words to teach us something. And I think she does. So Steve put a picture of Mary Oliver on the altar. So think about some of the things that she said, perhaps, and reflect on what poet gets through to you, what artist touches you, what sustains you, whether it's a natural world or a book you pull off a shelf or a painting or whatever. Functioning fully, these return us to who we are.